The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. My name is Andy Cahan. I'm Director of Author Events here at the Free Library. And I am pleased to welcome our guest this evening. Whether you're a child or a parent, like it or not, the topics addressed in the third edition of Virginia Morris's new book are of critical import to each of us in this room. How to Care for Aging Parents, which won the Books for a Better Life Award, quickly became the best-selling book on the subject when it was first released in 1996. Revised and expanded, the book is widely considered to be the caregiver's Bible. Ms. Morris is an award-winning journalist and the author of Talking About Death, which helps people prepare in advance for the decisions that arise at the end of life so they can make death a gentler passage. She has been a guest on Oprah, The Today Show, Good Morning America, NPR, and CNN, among other outlets, and she has testified on elder care issues before the U.S. Joint Economic Committee. In her introduction to the book, Jenny Chin Hansen, CEO of the American Geriatric Society and past president of AARP, writes, "How to Care for Aging Parents is easy to understand, painstakingly researched, and comprehensive. Best of all, it's warmly emphatic. From the first conversation to the last, Morris provides an invaluable guide." Having spent time with the book, I am happy to report it's all true. Please join me in welcoming Virginia Morris.
Hi, good evening. That was a nice introduction. Thank you, and I want to thank the Philadelphia Free Library for inviting me here today. I have so much I'd like to cover. If you saw the book out there, it's like so fat, and there's a lot of information. I've tried to narrow it down to four topics. I want to talk about some really practical things that aren't so sexy and exciting, but really important. I want to talk about you, which is sexy and exciting. I want to talk about your parents, and then I want to just mention something completely impractical and frivolous, but that I like. But before I do that, I just want to tell you a little quick story. When I was finishing the first edition of this book, which was back, over 20 years ago, we were looking for a title of the book, and obviously we never actually found a great one. But at that time, my dad was very sick, and he was kind of a curmudgeon when he wasn't sick, but when he got sick, he was really difficult to deal with. So my sister called me up one day and said, "I have a title for your book, Shoot the Bastard." We didn't go with that one. My husband, who is wiser and calmer, thought we should call it Be Nice, You're Next. Having recently, not so recently, finished carrying a long haul for my mother, I thought we should just call it The Book of Guilt. But I tell you this story because I think that all of those kind of sum up the frustrations and the emotions, and also the compassion of this job. On the practical front, wherever you are in this, and I'm sure all of you are dealing with very different issues, you know, whether you're just starting out and kind of looking at the first issues, whether you're deep in the trenches, whether you're nearing the end, try to be a step ahead. Try to think about what might come. And, you know, if driving may be an issue up the road, you know, start talking about that and weaning your parent away from the car. If you think at some point your parent may have to move, start researching the options. Think beyond today's crisis, because otherwise you're just going to be dealing with one crisis after the next, which is not going to mean great care for your parent. It's also going to mean a lot of headaches and stress for you. You know, I crisscross the country talking about how important it is to plan ahead, take action, you know, and I always feel like nobody's really listening to me because this is not really fun and nobody wants to do it and you're kind of dealing with today and who can think about tomorrow. And, you know, I think a lot of people think they've planned, but maybe not as much as they'd like. You know, I, of all the things that I've studied over 20 plus years, this is one of the most important. Think ahead. Talk to your parent. If not, if you can't talk with your parent, talk with your siblings or other caregivers, and take action. Some of the things that you need to talk about, I'm going to try to keep track of my time here because I can get very babbly on this subject. You know, you might want to talk about some basics like an emergency plan. You know, if you live far away and you can't reach your mother on the phone, you know, what do you do? Do you have the name of a neighbor? Do you, is there a key hidden under the mat? I mean, there's some very basic things. You know, if your father calls you and his speech is slurred and you're at work, you know, what are you going to do? Talk about your parents' goals and priorities. You know, what really matters to them? What do they want out of whatever time is left? And that conversation should really shape all the other conversations. You obviously need to talk about legal issues. You know, does your parent have an up-to-date will? A durable power of attorney. I'm sure everyone here knows what that is, but I'll just tell you, a document that gives you or somebody else the authority to make legal and financial decisions on your parent's behalf when he or she can't do that anymore. Make sure they have advance directives, a power of attorney for health care, and a living will outlining their wishes for end-of-life care. Those are kind of just the most basic must-dos. Talk about financial issues. You know, how are you going to kind of take the reins when your parent can't handle their finances? Who's going to take over? How is that going to work? Is there a way to simplify your parents' finances? So there's automatic deposit and automatic payments and everything's in one place and it's very clear and simple. And obviously long-term care, which is the biggest financial issue facing everybody. Nursing home care, in-home care, assisted living care. This stuff can cost $40,000, $60,000, $80,000 a year and up. Most people have to go through what seem like significant savings, and then they end up on Medicaid. You want to talk about how you're going to pay for that and how you're going to take care of your assets so you're not overspending. You want to talk about housing, obviously. Is this really loud? Is it okay? Okay. You know, wherever your parent is now, is this a long-term? Will he or she be able to stay there long-term? Are there modifications you can make maybe to their house to make it safer? If this isn't a long-term solution, what's the next step? What's out there? What options are available? People tend to wait way too long to do that. It's natural, but don't, because there's waiting lists. It takes a long time to get your parent to even really consider that move, to make that move. I mean, it can take a year or more. So don't wait on that one. Don't wait on any of this. And a lot of people assume like, oh, you know, when she needs care, she'll just move in with me. Or maybe the parent is assuming that. Don't make assumptions, because in fact, you know, you may be thinking, oh, she'll be moving in with me, and she's thinking she would rather be boiled in oil. You know, you need to talk. You need to talk about all of these issues. Medical care, and particularly end-of-life care, I can't urge you strongly enough, and I'm going to take a minute to talk about that because I did write a whole nother book on this subject. You know, we all want to die at home, free of pain, surrounded by loved ones. Most people die, if not in the ICU and in the hospital. You know, they die in pain. They die isolated from the people they love. It's really horrific. And there's a lot of reasons for this. I spent a long time studying it. And yes, doctors aren't good guides, and the system is kind of flawed. But ultimately, it's us making decisions. And we think we're ready, we think we know, but I'm telling you, when you're standing there and your heart is breaking into a million pieces, making these decisions is so hard. The decisions are so much more complicated than you expect. The emotions so much more acute. And quite often you aren't even given a choice. Quite often you're just kind of on this treadmill in the hospital, and doctors are just saying, well, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do this, and you're just going along with it till later you say, why did we do all that? So a lot of it is just asking questions and making sure that your parents' goals, that each medical decision really goes along with what your parent wants. So talk to your parent about not just a signed piece of paper, because what does that really mean at the end? Or a promise, like my father who said, you know, when I'm there, take me out with the garbage. That's really not that helpful an instruction when you're making medical decisions. So find out, what do they really mean by, you know, don't drag it out? What do they fear? What do they want to avoid? What do they want you to be thinking about when you're making those decisions? I cannot tell you how hard it is, because there isn't really a black and white place where you're saying, okay, it's futile, now we're going to quit. Every medical decision that you make along the way is leading you down a certain path. There's a lot of doors that give you exits, and you want to find the most peaceful one, and it's not easy at all. If there's any thought that your parent would want hospice, call early. Like, don't wait until, you know, your parents in the 11th hour. Calling hospice doesn't actually cause death, surprisingly enough. I know we feel that way, and the word is so loaded. But just making contact with them, introducing yourself, explaining the situation, you know, we're not really ready to sign on at this point, but we just wanted to have a communication with you. Go ahead and do that. I have very personal experience with this, actually, beyond all the many, many stories I've heard. Because when you're there in the hospital and you're facing a horrible decision, you can just call up and say, hey, it's us. You know, remember us? And hi, Karen. And here's the situation. What do you think? And it's not a new thing. You're already kind of in their books. But it's really helpful to have that other opinion when you're facing these hard choices. So talk with your parent, talk with your siblings. There's a lot of ways to bring these conversations up, but I think the most important thing, no matter how you bring it up, is to really start by listening. You know, we come to this with our own views of what our parents should do, but if we start by really hearing what they want and what their concerns are, we may learn something, but also they'll be more apt to listen to us when it comes to that. So research the options before you early on. Find out what are the community services in your parents' area. What are the housing options? Go tour a couple. Just spend an afternoon learning what's out there, because quite often there are services out there that you could use long before you think you could use them. Maybe you didn't know that, I don't know, the library delivers books, or there's visitors to homebound people, or there's grocery delivery or transportation services. There may be something out there that you could use, you know, that you didn't even know you could use. Okay, so the second thing I want to talk about is you. This job takes a really heavy toll. Anybody out there who is kind of thick in this knows. But it generally takes more of a toll than you even realize it's taking. Whether you're doing it 24/7 or just occasionally, or you're doing it, maybe your parent lives 10 minutes away, maybe they live 500 miles away, it's the emotions alone. I mean, the worry alone can just flatten you. You know, and you think, oh, I'm not doing that much. I'm just visiting her occasionally. I'm just, you know, taking her to the doctor. It's so draining. It's so draining. So you have to take care of yourself, because in addition to this constant feeling of worry, and it was really, I really figured it out when a doctor friend of mine was explaining that he was on call over the weekend, and I said, oh, do you get a lot of, you know, are you called in often? And he said, no, almost never. I said, so why do you hate it so much? He said, because I know I could be. That's what it's like, caring for a parent 24/7 for years. Even if you're not doing, you're thinking, I could be. It's out there. I'm waiting for the phone call. You know, we do, as I said, feel so guilty we're not doing enough and maybe resentful that we have to do so much. Parents and siblings can trigger this cascade of hurt and frustration and old roles and issues. You're not going to be good to anybody else if you're exhausted, irritable, anxious, sick, depressed. Caregivers have a much higher rate of both illness and death than other people, so you have to take care of yourself. I cannot stress this enough. You know, just take a step back, take a deep breath, and think about your own needs. You know, I could give you a whole list of things you need to do to take care of yourself, but just in brief, it's really important to try to recognize the limits of what you can do. This is your parent. You feel like you need to take care of them. They're getting maybe frailer and sicker, and you want to stop that process. But you can't do everything for them. You can't turn this all around. You can't make them young and healthy. You can't take away all their loneliness. You can't be there 24/7. Recognize what you really can give and what's realistic, and accept that if you can, and be okay with it. Get help early. You know, everybody thinks, well, it's my mother, it's my father, I can do this. But call the Area Agency on Aging. Go to eldercare.gov. It's a great first step anyway. They won't know about all the services in your area, but they'll know about a lot of them. Get your siblings involved in some way, friends and neighbors, whatever. Get some help in there because you shouldn't be doing this alone. Get away from it occasionally, even in small doses. You need to clear your mind. You need to think about something else. And just breathe, you know. Just, okay, every day, a couple times a day, just stop. Take a really slow breath. We're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. It is the one thing I hear the most from caregivers, and especially ones after their parents are gone, look back and say, oh my God, what was I doing? Why did I think I could handle all that? Honestly, I promise you, if you can take care of yourself, you will be a far better caregiver, more patient, more efficient, and calmer. So it kind of seems like it doesn't make sense. My mom needs me. I don't have time for me right now. You'll be better for her if you can take care of yourself. The third thing I want to talk about is your parent. The question I am most often asked when I give these talks is, my parent needs to blank, but he won't. Whatever. Stop driving. Sign papers. Stop cleaning his gutters. You know, use his emergency alert button, move out of his house. I know what he needs to do, and he won't do it. This is kind of the big dilemma of parent care. You know, they don't do what we tell them to do. Damn it. You know, I think most of us were about 16 when we realized that we knew more than our parents. And then we had teenagers of our own, and we thought maybe we were wrong. But now we really feel like we're right, because we're adults and we do know what's best for them. And the problem is we do know what it's like to be a teenager, but we don't know what it's like to be 88 with poor hearing and a bad knee and diabetes and heart disease and to have lost friends and to be where they are. We really don't know what that is. And the truth is, are we going to be so different from them when we're their age? Are we going to be so compliant when our kids say, you need to move, get out of this house, it's time? So we kind of have to walk this very fine line between our worries and our concerns and making them as safe as we can make them and respecting what they need, even if it's risky. So you know, if I, in a short way, when do you step in? If your parent has dementia, if your parent's going to burn the house down or wander off, yes, you have to step in very aggressively. It doesn't matter what they think. If your parent is driving, if your parent is at risk of killing somebody else, you need to step in aggressively. You can't let somebody else's life be in danger because of your parent. If your parent is being exploited or is victim of fraud, step in. But if your parent is basically competent, you know, there's only so much you can do. Talk about the issues. As I said before, listen to them. Okay, you don't want to move out of this house. Why? What do you love about this house? What would you miss? Talk about the risks. Do they really understand the risks of staying? Are they willing to take those risks? Get someone else involved. I know this is so frustrating, but often somebody says something over and over, Mom, you need to move, you need to move, you need to move. And then a brother from California walks in the door and says, you know, you might want to move out of this place. And Mom goes, yeah, maybe you're right. And you're just like, oh my God, I've been saying this for so long. But sometimes it just sounds different. You know, a doctor, a trusted friend, a brother, somebody else says it. They're just hearing it through a different way, and suddenly it makes sense. Depending on the issue, you might suggest a trial period. You know, just try it for 2 weeks. You know, sometimes maybe you, let's say, want to get helpers in the house, and a parent says, I don't want any strangers in my house, you know. Take it slowly. Maybe somebody's just delivering meals at first. Maybe they're just staying for half an hour. Try to get your parent to just agree to it for a short period of time just for you. Take it slowly. You know, it's just frustrating, but the problem is, at some point, when you've tried all these things and you've done what you can, you have to do the hardest thing of all. Back off. You know, it is their life. And if they are relatively competent, you know, we all take risks all the time. We all, you know, smoke cigarettes, or we don't wear our seat belts, or we eat McDonald's, or we go bungee jumping. I don't know. We don't, you know, just because you turn 85, you don't lose the right to take risks. So your parent may be taking a risk that they understand, and they're willing to take it. And you're going to want that same respect from your kids when you're that age. So sometimes you just have to back off. It's frustrating, but once you can really accept it, this is what they're going to do. There's nothing I can do about it. It can also be sort of freeing. Like, okay, we're going to move forward because this is the situation. I'm watching my clock. Okay, so just one last thing. My impractical, frivolous thing that is actually the thing I learned caring for my parents. And that is that we get so involved in all the details of the day, the medical appointments and the physical therapy appointments, and did they take this medication, and are they using their cane, and all the medical issues and the financial issues and the billing and everything else, that life just becomes one errand after the next. Sometimes you have to just get off the treadmill. Do something else. Be spontaneous. Go do something fun. Live life. You know, enjoy this time. I could tell you a number of stories that happened in my own life. I'll tell you one. So I was taking care of my mom, who had a zillion medical issues over the course of 15 years. And as always happened, when my siblings came in to visit, I knew, as the author of this book, that I was supposed to take my break and let them do all the work. But in Mom's mind, so-and-so was coming to visit. She wanted her days cleared and the apartment cleaned, and she was just going to have a lovely time with this visiting sibling. So they would come in and have this great time with Mom and assume that's what my life always was, and it never was. So after my sister had spent the weekend with her and was telling me what a lovely time she had with Mom, and they went out and they did all these things, I arrived, and Mom immediately like started, could I call this person and set up this appointment and deal with those papers over there? And she was so sorry because she needed some cream rubbed on her, and you know, just the whole list of chores of the day. And I just looked at her and I said, I'm not doing any of that today. I said, scoot over. I lay down in bed next to her. I got out my iPad. I put on American in Paris. We watched Gene Kelly dancing across that screen. We sang in our terrible voices along with him. And I could see in the reflection of the screen her head leaning against mine. Now, in all the years of caregiving, that's what I'm going to hang on to. So take a break from it sometimes. Just break the rules. Go get some ice cream. Sit in the park. Do something fun, because that is what you're going to remember when this is all over. That's most of what I have to say. I'm going to take some questions, but I just wish you all the luck, and I really hope that this can be have some positive in all the blur of work that you have to do and all the emotions. Thank you. Does anybody have a question, or did I answer it all?
I understand the focus is on people who are resistant to dying and their loved ones who are resistant to letting them go. But can you give us an idea about what proportion that is not the case? That people are quite willing to die, and they guide their loved ones into a peaceful letting them go.
Do you mean what?
Of parents.
What percent of the
yes.
population?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. You know, I could tell you the percent of the population that dies, say, with hospice. I mean, I don't think there's a study of kind of good death, bad death, because the problem is a lot of people go home and have all of that kind of in the last 48 hours. So I'm not sure how I would classify that if there's been 6 months of pain and suffering before that last 48 hours. You know, I think the problem becomes when you're ready to die and you're not dying. And that's incredibly hard for everybody. But I don't know what percent. I would say the majority of people go through a lot of pain and suffering needlessly. And, you know, one thing to think about when you're there, and you will be there, if not with this parent, with somebody else. Most deaths today occur after a family has made a decision to stop or forego some medical treatment. We are playing God every day in every hospital in this country, playing God, is to not think, you know, the doctor may say, you know, what do you want to do? You need to think, what would she want me to do? Because as soon as you're thinking, what do I want to do? Millions of years of evolution have instilled in us an incredibly strong instinct, our strongest instinct, to stay alive and to keep the people we love alive. So even though some logical part of your brain may know, yeah, okay, she wouldn't want this, I am telling you, the words just pop out of your mouth. Yes, do something. It's not time. Don't let her go now. It's amazing. And the decisions are so hard because it's not about unplugging somebody. It's about transfusions and dialysis and, you know, one more treatment and one more surgery. And there's odds and possibilities and who knows. And as I mentioned, you know, quite often it's just, we need to do this. Nobody's saying, do you want to? Are you sure? What would the alternative be if we didn't do that? So I don't know. I don't think I answered your question about statistics, but I can tell you it's pretty ugly out there. ICUs are full. Any other? Yes?
For our grandparents or our parents, who is responsible to really rule out the wellness and healthness, the health and wellness option, you know? And the alternative medicine that might help, you know, dementia and all this other stuff on their behalf?
Boy, you raised such a good question, and I wish I had a really easy answer, but there isn't one. Diminished capacity, and if I got the question right, who makes the decision, and is this person really capable of making decisions, and if not, then who? You know, competence, dementia is a very, there's a lot of gray. So somebody might be considered competent at one moment and not at another, maybe when drugs are less effective, you know, when you've taken the drug at 8 and now it's 2 in the afternoon, maybe you're a little more competent than you were earlier. They may be competent to make a decision about one thing and not another, signing a will versus life-saving medical treatment. So I hope I didn't misunderstand your question, but A, the question is, when is somebody competent? And every, it's always a case by case, you know? And the second question I think you were asking was kind of who's, if they're not competent to make the decision, then who is? Is that what you were asking? But even like you're saying, the question is what to even report, like what's abuse and what is just bad doctor's orders and what is just survival? I mean, maybe you shouldn't give your parents sleeping pills every night, but in order for the household to survive, maybe you have to do certain things. So it's very individual and it's very hard. And getting somebody to, and I hope I'm answering your question, but to eat well, as you know, you know, to eat well, for example, is not as easy as it sounds. And often they're not hungry anymore, especially somebody with dementia doesn't want food anymore. Or, and you know, it is such a messy, you know, I wish there were nice, clear guidelines, but it is a messy thing, an aging parent. And you're right, people are so overdrugged. They don't use lifestyle approaches as much as they should. It's all just give them medications, and that's another good thing for everyone to know is the elderly are so over-medicated, and quite often the medications are causing more problems than they're solving. So you want to ask a lot of questions and make sure you get a second opinion, and really the lowest dose, you know, the least amount of medications, it causes a lot of confusion, a lot of incontinence, a lot of problems. But as far as legal, you know, it's not only state by state, it's institution by institution how they handle it. Caseworkers are so overloaded that any call like that is not even going to get attention because fraud and abuse of the elderly is so enormous. I mean, real abuse, like, and I don't mean that isn't real abuse, but you know, hitting people and stealing from them. And, you know, they can hardly even deal with most of those calls. So a call in that an elderly person is not eating the way they should, it's just not going to get very far. But if you want to talk afterward, I'm going to hang out a little bit and I maybe can answer a little more specifically because that's a really messy area. You're it's a good question just for that reason.
From the beginning of March when my father went into the hospital and then my mother went into the hospital and then my mother came home and then my mother fell and my father is still in the hospital and then they both went to rehab together. They were in the hospital at one end. One was at one end of the wing and the other one is at the other end of the wing. And then and so then they were both were in rehab together and then my father decided to leave permanently. And so this is all in the course of like 6 weeks. And now my mom is in assisted living. You know, we're going to, a year ago, we're just going to like wait and see what happens. We'll deal with it when it happens. So that's what we're doing. We're dealing with it from day to day. And then she was doing well, and then she fell, and then she fractured her pelvis, so then she's back in rehab. So it's like a constant, you know, one thing after another. And so you said, try to stay a step ahead. Like, what's my next step? Like, what do I, like, you know, every day I go over there, my sister goes over, you know, fortunately rehab and the assisted living, it's all one facility. And she's like ready to check out. She's like, I've lived my life. You know, why am I here? I'm almost 83 years old. You know, she's got COPD and she's got, you know, like spinal issues and blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. So, and then of course I'm the eldest, so I get sort of like the, you know, where are you? And my sister says she never does
that. It's usually the youngest, actually.
Well, my sister says she never does that to me, Karen. Like, I don't know. Like, so, and I'm cool with it. You know, I know she's like, you know, she was always in control of her life and of everything. So, like, how do I anticipate the next step? Like, I don't see anything.
So, your mom's in assisted living?
Well, we just got her into assisted living, but and she was there for a month when she fell, of course, because she's had incidences of falling, just like for no, you know, she doesn't know why she falls. In fact, she fell at home, like, maybe 4 or 5 weeks before this. I went over in the middle of the night to pick her up and then hurt my back, you know, that kind of situation. So it's like just one constant thing. So yes, she's in assisted living, but now she's in rehab, which is at the other end of the same facility.
And your dad
passed away.
Okay. Oh, in March. Okay.
At the end of April, right. And she's mad at him. She says, I'm angry with your father for leaving me and not taking me with him.
Well, you know, so
how do I stay one step ahead? I feel like we take two steps forward and like three steps
backwards.
Well,
that is what you end up doing a lot of. But, you know, I think talking to the people at the facility about if she continues to decline, can she stay there? Like, at what point are they going to throw her out? Assisted living can only take you to a certain point and then they can't handle you anymore. And what happens if she's at that point, and where is that point, and where would she move? You know, and that sounds like a lot, but it's really a conversation with an administrator. You know, how do we plan for the next step? If she's, I don't know, if she's just talking about, I wish I was gone, how healthy she really is, like I said, calling hospice just to kind of know what your options are, so that if there's another, and there will be, medical problem, you kind of have somebody to give you a third opinion or a second opinion about how you're going to handle it. You know, I'm not saying it's easy to be a step ahead, but definitely I think in the case of assisted living for anybody, you want to know, you know, how long can they stay in there and what happens if they need real nursing care? Are you going to have to hire somebody 24/7? Do they throw them out at some point? I mean, assisted living is the most generic term, and it can mean anything from just like a group home to almost a nursing home with dementia care units and everything else. But there is a point at which they can't keep people, and often suddenly it's, well, we can't take care of her anymore. Wait, what? So, I mean, I guess that would be my thought of the next step. Are your siblings nearby, or are you taking on all of this? Well, I mean, do be sure to take care of yourself, because that I hurt my back thing, you know, what happens if something happens to you? You know, who's there to take care of her? And also, it just brings up another issue I want to quickly say. If you have two parents that are alive and one's taking care of the other, try to focus some attention on the well parent, because what happens is everyone's focusing on the sick parent, and suddenly that well parent gets sick, and now what? You know, nobody was kind of thinking about that. That is the parent that needs your care and your time and some respite and a lot of attention, because everything is riding on him or her. I'm going to hang out, so if anybody wants to talk with me further, I'm not sure. You know, it's hard to answer very detailed questions generically.
Here's another sort of messy situation. I'm sure you probably...
They're all messy.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard this one before. My siblings and I are taking care of our two aging parents who, to put it mildly, are combative. It is not a very happy marriage. It hasn't been for a long time. We were sort of hoping, praying that maybe as they got older, they would sort of mellow out, but it's only gotten worse. You're laughing because I guess it's familiar to people. But it's pretty critical, because actually my father's has Parkinson's, is in advanced stages of Parkinson's. It's next to impossible to get them to agree on anything. What is your, just, you know, I don't want to boy, with all the details, I'm sure you've heard this type of situation before, but what's your advice for a situation like that where you're dealing with two aging parents who will not agree on anything, just out of spite, practically? So.
I wish I had, like, a magic wand. you know, I mean, I hate to say this. Some of it is accept. You're not going to... I mean, some of it is accepting this and not being in the thick of it yourself emotionally. I know that sounds ridiculously simple and easy, but, I mean, not easy, impossible. Yes, I've heard this question a lot. And I still don't really know the answer because they're not getting along, and unless you just want to drug them and have this guy call services for you, there isn't a really simple answer. One thing I would say to all of you, though, professional geriatric care managers are usually social workers or people who have worked in some area in geriatrics. They are not cheap, but often really worth the money. And they tend to know about all the local services and programs. They tend to know how to kind of mediate family situations. The good ones are gold. And even getting just an initial assessment and having somebody come in, and it maybe cost you $250 to just kind of, if your parents are still at home or whatever, just sort of look over the situation. Help you see what's the next step you should be planning for, dealing with family problems, not that they're going to solve them, but at least helping you to kind of, okay, I can't own this. I can't think off the top of my head what the website is, but anyway, call a couple and find one that kind of suits you, and they can be amazing and step in and really help you kind of, okay, let's look at all these pieces. Not that it pertains to you, but while it's on my mind. Sometimes just having a family meeting, like, okay, where are we? You know, what's the situation financially? What's the situation with the house? What do we need to do going forward? Who's going to do what? How are we going to support each other? Let's just take a deep breath and try to kind of not just deal with each hour as it comes, but, you know, kind of have a bigger plan. But I wish I had a better answer for you. Marital therapy probably isn't really an option right now. And and I think a sense of humor goes a long way, and hoping that you don't have that marriage when you're that age. But it's hard. It's really hard. And especially at some point, if they have very different desires housing-wise, maybe a parent wants to move into some facility and the other refuses adamantly they're not going to, and it's just, you know, well, who do we go with? There are a lot of questions about aging parents that I actually don't have the perfect answer to. It's complicated, and that's why I focus so much on taking care of you, because you just can't solve all the problems. Sometimes you just have to throw up your hands and say, well, this is their life, not, you know, I don't have to own all this. And that sounds kind of callous maybe, but sometimes there's just not a whole lot you can do. If they're fighting all the time and they've been doing it for 30 years, it's not going to stop now. I hate to say it.
You've painted a grim but realistic picture of aging and caregiving needs for our parents. What are we learning about this so that we can not fall into the same trap? I don't want to make it a personal question unless you want it to be for yourself, but do you want to make it a broader answer for what the adult children have learned from these experiences and how we will face our own aging and mortality, perhaps in a less stressful way for our children?
Oh my God, I love that question. I hope we learn something. Gosh, it would be awful if we went through all this and didn't learn something. I do have a chapter of the book called You're Next, just on that subject. But, you know, plan ahead, way ahead. I am 55 and I am already deciding where I'm going to grow old. Save, a lot because it's expensive growing old and you want choices. And if you don't want to be an enormous burden to your kids, you know, have the conversations early, organize your finances, make decisions about housing and what you want and make it very clear, and know that you can eat all the kale in the world and do all the yoga in the world, but you are going to grow old and frail and have needs. You know, I just think sometimes we just think it's not going to happen to us. But I think the things that we are kind of belatedly doing with our parents, having the conversations with spouse or friends, if you, you know, kids live far away and there's no spouse, you can make kind of a circle of friend caregivers who are your power of attorney and know your situation, are going to look out for you. I have interviewed hundreds of people who are already looking into much more imaginative housing situations, co-housing, grouping together with friends, finding, you know, people that are maybe buying apartments next to each other, going into continuing care retirement facilities, life care facilities that you go into when you're still young and youngish, and independent, and know that they're going to take care of you for... But, you know, it's so worth doing the work and planning ahead and making it... I know it's, like, the last thing anybody wants to do, but it gives you so much peace of mind, and it is the greatest gift you will ever give your children, is to just, you know, here's my plan, and here's my finances, and here's what I want, and here's what I'm going to do, and here's what, you know, maybe I hope you'll help me with this and this, but I don't want you to take this on. People think like caring for your aging parent is just something everybody's done throughout history. They do it across every continent and every culture. It's happened forever. So why are we having such a hard time with it? What we have been facing in the last generation or two is totally different from anything anybody has faced in terms of caring for an aging parent. People are living so much longer with intense disabilities. You know, women are working, we're having kids later, we're a mobile society, we live far away from our parents. This is not just, gee, everyone else has done this. This is a pretty new thing. So our generation, the boomers, etc., really better think this out and have a plan, because one thing that's been fascinating for me, just in a very anecdotal sort of way, is I started researching this subject in 1991 when there was no internet, if you can imagine life without the internet. And I would talk to people whose parents were 82 or 85. I am talking to people regularly. Well, mom's 105 and dad's 103. I mean, weekly I hear that. I never heard that 20 years ago. So when I say plan, like you're going to retire at 65, you've got an entire lifespan ahead of you. You better save a lot of money and have some hobby you really love. But, you know, people are living routinely into their 90s and over 100. So, yeah, we better plan big time. I will be so disappointed if our generation hasn't learned that. No, it's me. I have very different views than most people on this subject. Most people who are in this field will say, oh, yes, everybody should have long-term care insurance. I am not one of them, and I am a rare bird on that front. So that's why I hesitate, because my explanation of why I don't think that necessarily. Long-term care insurance, you know, covers a certain amount of care when you need it. Medicare does not cover custodial care. They're not going to help you with daily tasks, and that's the kind of care most people end up needing. So long-term care insurance covers a lot of that. And for a large segment of the population, it's definitely everybody should think about it, research it, consider it. But what's happened is the premiums have gone way up. You have to realize this isn't like I'm buying car insurance because I could go out tomorrow and have an accident. If you're 50 years old and you're buying long-term care insurance, the odds are you're not going to need it for like 30 years. So you're going to be paying premiums for a long time for something that even when you get there, you know, it doesn't cover all of it. It covers some of it. You know, you really have to do the math. And the premiums can go up and you are stuck. I mean, premiums in the last few years, some of them went up 30, 40%. So, you know, make sure, and a lot of companies that sold long-term care insurance have stopped because they realized, wait a minute, this isn't really working out for us. So, you know, for people who may or probably will end up, if they needed, say, $100,000 or $200,000 worth of care and they would end up on Medicaid, probably shouldn't, you know, it's not worth it. People who have maybe over, I'm just throwing out numbers, $2 million in assets, they probably can pay for their own care. The rest of us, you know, research it, see what's available to you, but do the math. And I have a pretty long section in the book that goes through this because I felt like I had to justify what was not popular advice. But I think a lot of people bought long-term care insurance and paid out for years and years, and the premiums went up and up, and then, you know, it wasn't as helpful as they thought. I do know a lot of stories where it's been a godsend, but it's a lot of money over a long period of time, and especially if it's you and your spouse buying it, and maybe it's $2,000 or $3,000 a year or something, and you're paying it for, and then the premiums, you know. But it's also what makes you sleep at night, you know. I feel like I'm so overinsured, it makes me, like, go crazy because you have to have insurance on so many things, and then I have healthcare in my house and my car, and my, it's just like, ah. But, you know, for a lot of people, it just helps them sleep at night to know they have it. So it's not a yes or a no, but I tend to lean toward be very careful.
In this area, there's a... the Philadelphia Corporation for the Aging and the Jewish Family Services, which takes everybody, will come out and do an analysis. And they've been, I had a brother who had MS, and we had that done for him, and they were incredibly helpful with all kinds of resources. And then on another note, my son tells me that when I get old and frail, he's taking me out into the woods in Alaska, and if I can make it back, he will take care of me.
So. Do you get a parka or something?
No, I just have to.
And
make
is this
it back.
You're good with this? This
yeah,
plan?
I'm good with that.
Yeah, but that's like the take me out with the garbage thing. You know, it's not really a long term plan, and he probably won't do it. Yeah. Well, I've realized I'm going to have to rewrite this whole book before I get there because I don't want my kids reading this and necessarily taking it verbatim. But you said, Mom, it's a problem. But your point, again, calling the Area Agency on Aging, every part of the country is covered by one. You can find it through the Elder Care Locator. They won't know about all the services. They won't know about all the programs, but they should know about a lot of it. And a lot of them will send out a caseworker to review the situation, which would be like a geriatric care manager, but not as expensive. And, you know, it's person by person how good it is. And every Area Agency on Aging is totally different from the next one, so some are good and some aren't. And, you know, call up. Sometimes you can just through a phone call get a lot of information if you find the right person.
Hi, I have two parents, two aging parents, and one of them was just in the hospital with multiple strokes. He is recovering. And at one point, we did think we were going to lose him. Both my parents have no sort of insurance against anything that happens to them. So that would have left the financial burden on myself and my brother.
They have Medicare?
They do not have Medicare. So my question was, do you recommend taking out insurance for them? As in, like, actually being the policy holder? Because they're doing nothing to financially prepare for the event that one of them were to pass or need long-term care.
You know, it's so hard without knowing their financial situation and how close they would be to Medicaid if they needed something. If they don't have any Medicare, long-term care insurance. Oh, do I recommend that you get life insurance on your parents? Wow, I would imagine it would be incredibly expensive to get life insurance for your parents right now. I can't even imagine what it would cost, like $30,000 a year for a policy. I don't even, I mean, if they're as frail and elderly as you think. I wouldn't think you could get a life insurance policy.
My mother's like the healthier one out of all of them. She's like the horse, if you will. She's 55. And then my dad's 65, and he's had 4 strokes. So I would imagine insuring him would be very difficult.
You know what? I can talk to you. I mean, that's a whole complicated question of their finances and what your sort of aim is in getting life insurance for them. You know, I think your biggest issue now is can they cover with what they have their care? Will they go through all of the money and you guys will get none, maybe? I mean, I don't know if that... I can talk to you afterward, because that's complicated. Is that... Okay, so I'll hang out a little bit, and I guess there's books so I can sign. Is that... Where am I going next? I'll be upstairs, and I have a website. I almost forgot to tell you, because I'm so not good at this stuff. Careforagingparents.com. If you have questions, email them to me. I answer questions online, honestly. So, and you can download stuff, and I don't know, I didn't put the website together, but anyway, thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.